Welcome to the Navit Gaming Podcast, where it is our mission to explore the business and future of video games. We bring together the industry's brightest builders, investors, and thinkers to keep a pulse on current events, dissect emerging trends in games, share lessons learned, and have a great time. This podcast is also part of Navit's growing ecosystem, which ranges from free and premium research to consulting and advisory services. For more information, visit www.navic.co. This episode is brought to you by Overwolf. With over 1,500 games supported, 165,000 creators, and 38 million monthly active users, Overwolf is the guild for in-game creators. Whether you're a gamer, creator, or game studio, Overwolf is the ultimate destination for integrating UGC in games. For game studios, Overwolf offers CurseForge for studios, a white label solution that lets game makers and publishers easily integrate mods safely and seamlessly into their games, both existing and new, at zero cost. It's battle tested by AAA studios and games, including Maxis with The Sims 4, Studio Wildcard with Ark, Take-Two Interactive, and others. For creators, Overwolf is the all-in-one platform that enables creators to build, distribute, and monetize in-game apps, mods, and game servers. In 2022, Overwolf paid over $160 million to in-game creators, proving that they truly value the talents and contributions of the gaming community. You can check out everything Overwolf has to offer at overwolf.com or check out the details in the show notes. And with that, let's jump into the episode.
Welcome to the Navit Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, David Taylor, and today I'm joined by Xiang Chen, the CTO of Century Games, a top 20 mobile publisher, according to Sensor Tower, and the creators of the recent breakout hit, Whiteout Survival, which drew in 500 million in-app purchases over the past year, according to the most recent Sensor Tower estimates. What makes Century Games particularly unique is their willingness to experiment with new platforms such as Roblox, and that's where we'll be spending most of our time today. Century Games has two successful Roblox experiences in Livetopia and MetLife, and that they launched from scratch over the last few years. Given how difficult it is to be successful on Roblox with original experiences, I'm excited to learn how more traditional developers can find success on Roblox and how this fits into their broader strategy as a successful mobile developer. Xiang, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, David.
Could you share a bit about your background and how you ended up at Century Games just to kick us off?
Yeah, so I am an all-time game developer. I started working on game industry since I graduated from college. My first company was in Ubisoft, developing AAA games. Been working on several AAA game titles, Ubisoft and Electronic Arts, and I started working on MMORPG games on PC, then onto the webpage games and mobile games. It's a pretty traditional path over the past two decades. Been working on Tencent and also briefly a year at Roblox, developing infrastructures over there. And I realized I am a game developer rather than platform developer. So I left Roblox, started my own startup, building mobile games. My investor was FunPlus, which was the same entity with Century Games before a spin-off. And I think 2018, Century Game, there was a spin-off from FunPlus, and Century Game started developing games by own. They were looking for a CTO, so they found me, and I think that was a good opportunity. So I actually merged my team into Century Games. So now that's today. And actually, a very interesting team I founded at that time was developing Roblox games. So that's actually a perfect combination between our team and Century Games.
Got it. And so just today, before we jump into the Roblox side of things, what's your role at Century Games today? What do you cover and what are you working on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm a CTO of Century Games. So I work on mostly technology, including essential technologies and also the infrastructures for our mobile game business, as well as Roblox, because I was the founder of the development team. Yeah, that's pretty much my everyday life. So working a bit here and a bit over there and talking to a few other Roblox developers for sure and Roblox platform, of course. Yeah, most of my time was still on mobile game, but Roblox, to be honest, is taking a lot of my time for sure.
Awesome. That's great because we want to talk about Roblox today. Whiteout Survival is obviously an incredibly exciting game. Vic actually did a deep dive on it. So for those listening,
thank you.
Be sure to check that out if you want to learn more about what made Whiteout Survival successful, at least from Novik's perspective. But going back to the Roblox side of things, you mentioned that you had already started working on Roblox before you came to Century Games. So I'm curious to just hear how that came together. What made you interested to start developing Roblox games?
I had some background at Roblox. That was very long ago, it was 2013 and 2014. But I've been always keeping an eye on the company on the platform. And I think back in the end of 2016, there's a rapid growth started at Roblox and be paying a lot of attention over there. Everyone's paying a lot of attention over there at that time. I think in 2019, I started to realize, okay, there might be a really good opportunity for game developers on that platform. So I actually had, because I was still running my startup at that time, we had a few mobile game titles, not huge success, but still good enough to support the team. But I always keep an eye on opportunities, and I was feeling there was an opportunity on the Roblox platform. So I had a team of about 5 people, started doing some initial research and prototypes on the Roblox platforms, building some Roblox games, mostly game prototypes. And then there was the acquisition. So we got merged into Century Games. And we discussed with our CTO and feel like because Century Games already had a pretty strong presence on mobile, so it doesn't make a lot of sense for our team to just work on something that there is already infrastructure at Century. So it's actually the best interest for our team for my previous team to dedicate on Roblox because there was a new trend. That's why I literally converted my entire team to the Roblox developer, I think back in 2019. That was how we started doing Roblox development. A little bit, it's not a deterministic path, but but still we end up doing, I can give you, if you want to hear, I can give you a little bit more details about that. Like what's our first title and was that successful?
That would be great. I think a lot of folks listening are probably interested to hear what was it like? What was the learning curve? What was the onboarding experience onto Roblox so that if they're interested on building on Roblox, they can sort of manage their expectations for how long it takes to get ramped up and be able to make an impact?
Yeah, so absolutely. It's very interesting. And I would totally love to share with professional developers because being a professional developer or seasoned developer, you would think that you probably have an upper hand on the Roblox platform, given that a lot of developers on the platform, indie developers, some of them are kids, they don't have a lot of experiences as you do. That was what we said. We literally said, I hope there are not a lot of Roblox developers listening to this podcast. I was thinking, we were joking, let's teach those kids how to make games. That was literally what we said at that time. We were we're totally thinking we're going to dominate that. We took our mobile game experience into our first game we made. The game is still running. The game is called Mega Mech. So it's a mech battling game. I think there is a mobile game similar to that called Robot Arena. I'm sorry, I forgot. It's been so many years. So it's basically a mech battling game.
I've seen the game actually. It's pretty
cool. I've seen the game probably 100 concurrent player right now. I don't know.
It was much bigger before, actually.
It was bigger before, yeah. The game hasn't been updated for over 3 years, I believe. So you can see how interesting this platform is still doing. It has 100 concurrent players. Sometimes I had multi-hundred concurrent players, which is not too bad. So we had that game. So we spent a year developing that. It was really good graphic quality. I even showcased that to Roblox team and they were excited about that. Everyone was excited about that. So we think, okay, so that's going to be a mass hit. And we launched the game. It was some good feedback. But immediately, literally the game didn't take off. There was the maximum, I think, 4,000 concurrent player, but mostly because Roblox promoted the game. We did a lot of user acquisition through the ads network, Roblox ads network, but it didn't trigger the platform search and discovery algorithm at all, because we know the retention was pretty bad. It was, I think it was under like 15%. It was like a bit between 10 and 13, I believe, at that time. So yeah, we tried a lot of ways to patch that, but didn't make it work. And then we tried to understand what's going on. It's a game had a really good graphic, had really, in our opinion, really good onboarding experience. So the biggest lesson we've learned is that we took the mobile game experience too heavily into the platform, which is not really compatible with the platform's user expectations. And to be more specific, because we saw this game is very strategical, very tactical, so we need to teach those players how to play the game. Plus, we saw those players, they were young, they don't have a lot of FPS or TPS experience. So we tried to teach them how to play the game. So it's a pretty, like, in terms of mobile standard, a pretty hands-on onboarding experience, like very curated, very experiences. We saw that was right. So that was definitely right for making a mobile game, right? If you download a new mobile game, it's like literally all the arrows teaching you how to play the game. Like you can't make single one mistake over there because they just curated everything for you. But it was not the case for Roblox, because Roblox players, they play in cohort. So they play with their friends. That was a very obvious play pattern on the platform. Like literally after years of observation and understanding, that's what we found. So one typical scenario is they do a lot of like play dates. So they play those games with their schoolmates, classmates, their friends, their cousins, and they always just the players, they have different progressions in different games. So if they bring in a new player and they had to go through that tutorial experience, it's actually really disconnected. So it basically not really allowing them to play together. So they actually shut down the Roblox social feature severely. That, in our opinion, that was the biggest issue for that game. That was why we, in Lightopia, we had no tutorial at all. You land into the game, you have everything you can play with immediately. So that's basically the biggest lesson we've learned from working on Mega Man. Also, as a professional developer, that was the very hard lesson learned. I hope anyone who wanted to enter the Roblox space could listen to our experience that could basically help you to avoid that.
Yeah.
Imagine the biggest misstep. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that insight of thinking about the end user and what they, how they're using Roblox to engage, to think about this is a play date. This isn't necessarily like a game session. So how do we facilitate more social experiences in order to deliver a need that they have as a player? I'm curious then, I know that you guys have deep experience on 4X games and strategy games. I'm curious, what was the process to decide on Lifetopia, which is a role-playing game, which is something that was a departure from what you had worked on previously?
Yeah, actually, Century Game not only developing 4X games, but we also develop casual games. A few of our pretty good titles, including, that was, you know, we launched Lifetopia before we launched Whiteout Survival, actually. So our backgrounds were more on the casual side. So we had a few pretty successful casual games, including Family Found Adventure, Dragonscapes Adventure, even Frozen City was a casual game. And also a few games like Idle Mafia. But yeah, we had a lot of casual game background. So it's actually pretty natural for us to develop casual games. There was another reason why we created Lifetopia was we actually felt there was an opportunity in the role player to the RP game space, because at that time, Brookhaven, even today, Brookhaven is, you have to say, it's a top two Roblox experience. So we saw the massive success of Brookhaven. And we walk into Brewhaven, we feel like the game barely gets updated and the graphic was very, in my opinion, old school. So we feel like if we modernize the game environment, we add more features to that to make it bigger, there might be an opportunity. That's basically why we want us to develop Livetopia.
Super interesting. And going back to what you said before around player expectations, there's an expectation that these games are going to appear like they were made by a teenager, young game developer, an element of jankiness, if you will. I'm curious if you took that into mind when developing Livetopia, or you were thinking, let's do a professional, let's make this look as pristine as possible while taking the best gameplay patterns from the top game, Brookhaven.
Yes, as I mentioned, we learned the lesson. So I also the advice to any professional developer wants to enter the Roblox space is try to learn from the native developers because they actually know what their audience are looking for. And they've been on the platform for years, even some of them are for over a decade. And they have a very deep understanding of the audience. So yeah,
Did you hire native developers?
Yes or no. So we talked to them very actively. There were contractors working with us, but because a lot of our teams, they are based in Singapore and China, so we don't find a lot of local native developers. So we end up hiring, but also we had an existing team, so we actually... Yeah, it was a lot of local hire. But when we talked to a lot of them, there are contractors working with us, but not converted to full-time employees. But yeah, but the thing is, in my opinion, the most important thing is really just to learn from the native developers and also just observe the player's pattern. We actually, because all these servers, where most of them are open, so you actually will be able to just jump into a server and observe the player's behavior and you will play together with the players. And it's pretty funny because the player knows who's, many players know who are the developers. So sometimes I jump into a server, they recognize me and they just wanted to hang out with me. And it's actually a pretty interesting experience. And it gave me the opportunity to ask them directly, what do they think? It was right what they were looking for. In my opinion, it's like more authentic feedback rather than just you have those polls or those kind of feedback boards that you ask them to put on their feedback. It was, in my opinion, more passive. This is more active. So I like a lot playing together with them.
That's definitely something that sets Roblox apart, I think, is just like the ability to go into servers and just watch players engage and do the research by watching their behavior. I've had that experience myself, and just being able to see the chats, like when people run into issues, they'll write the question in the chat and say like, hey, how do I do this thing? And so yes, if you're in the servers and you keep saying the same question again and again, you're like, all right, we have something that we need to address. If people can't figure out how to do the TUI, or they can't figure out how to get that objective completed.
That's right. Believe it or not, the chat is actually one very important metrics we are measuring. The more active, at least for role-playing games, the more active the chat is, typically the more successful the game is. If you jump into the Brookhaven server, you will find there is a lot of chats happening all the time. If you go into a Livetopia, you'll see like fewer chat. If you go to less popular role-playing games, sometimes the chat is dead. So it's actually pretty important. And I think for many other Roblox games, that's the same. Pretty much most, I would say like 99% of the Roblox game had chat enabled. And actually, chat is also a pretty native way for players to learn how to play. They literally just ask in those chat channel how to play if they don't know. And that was like why sometimes the hands-on tutorial is not really needed, because they just ask others. Because believe it or not, this is a super social environment. It just player, they don't, yeah, they just talk. They don't feel anything. They just don't want to make friends. Like sometimes you enter a server, you just immediately receive friend request. It's very normal.
Yeah, I always tell people that like Roblox, for all the game experiences on there, is essentially what AOL Instant Messenger was for my generation. It's just like a place where you go after school to hang out with your friends digitally.
It's actually more like a social platform rather than a gaming platform. I totally believe so. And another interesting metric is I don't have the specific number, but players brought in by friends, I think it's 5x more engaging than than organic players.
Interesting.
3x or 5x, definitely like multifold more engaging. And they monetize better as well by a pretty big margin. So that's why a lot of game, they have those invite friend feature, not because like they want to use this to, they are apparently like one way is to allow you to acquire more users, but the more important, this is the way to allow you to acquire more like users, high quality users. So this is more important. And high quality users triggers platform's search and discovery algorithm. And this actually funnels you like more organic traffic into your game. So this is actually a pretty good circle.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a data point. I can't remember how recent it was. In the last 2 years, I think Roblox shared a data point that players play 8 different games on average per play session. They're much more transitory in nature. And so anything you can do to retain players is definitely valuable because the majority of your player base is actually through acquisition.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, I'd love to like dig deeper into Livetopia at this point and just understand what's going on with Livetopia. I mean, you guys have been doing a lot of brand activations. And from my perspective, I think partnering with an existing successful game is a much more effective way to get impressions on your brand if you're a brand owner, brand manager. And so I'm curious, just from your business perspective, like, you know, with the Roblox take rate, how big of an opportunity, how important is that brand revenue for the ultimate business that you have in Livetopia?
You might not believe that actually we make more money from brand integration than from the platform revenue. It's actually a pretty important part of our revenue for Roblox business. The thing about Livetopia is it's a contemporary role-playing game, so that naturally fit brand integrations. It's just like a virtual world. And so it's so easy to just build a Nike store, a Lego store in the game. So we literally could take any brand integration as long as they are family friendly and give us a lot of opportunities. Some Roblox game, they have like very limited. There are like, for example, the fantasy games, they have very limited brand choices, very limited choices to do brand integrations, but we are more. So yeah, this allow us to really just select a very good brand partner. And as for brand integration, I can share a bit of best practices if you think that's good for the audience.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So first of all, so one of the big lessons we have learned is try to make that very organic. You don't want to just bring in a brand integration in a completely different experience and integrate that into your game experience, which actually going to drive your players away. We had a few which actually reduced our gameplay metrics, hurting the game discovery because the algorithm, the model is always, I think the models got refreshes every day. So if your metrics was affected, so technically a model will send you less traffic, which at the end of the day, you don't want to see that as a Roblox developer. So try to integrate the brand content in a very organic way. For example, for role-playing games, we want that to be a role-playing scenario, right? We actually had some very successful brand integration. For example, Lego. We literally built a small part of Lego City. There are skate parks. There are like a Lego building that you actually will be able to customize. There are Lego vehicles, so player will be able to drive around.
So those got liked by the players a lot. There are some clothing store, which was also a pretty good integration in Livetopia, because a lot of players, they just want to... Oh, by the way, I can share a very interesting findings. For role-playing games, one very important feature everyone should integrate is the avatar feature. You should allow the player to change their avatar. Even the player will be able to change their avatar through Roblox website. But the very native way to allow them to change their avatar in-game is actually making a huge difference, because we actually A/B tested that. With or without a avatar integration, they're going to be 30% of play session impact. 30% is huge.
In terms of average session length, you mean?
The average session length, yeah. If you take away the avatar, in-game avatar store, and they're going to be, this average session length is going to be reduced by 30%.
Can I just ask a quick question on that, though? So, like,
when you
did that test, did you already have an established audience? Because sometimes I think that the avatar customization, it's just another thing that a player has to do before they get into the activity of the game. I'm curious, did you test that before you had a critical mass and people had already bought into being players of Livetopia? Or did you A/B test that at the very start?
No, we actually tested that in the middle, because we had another game called Skytopia. That was mostly just like a small experience, because we, at that time, we created, I believe that was a 1 year anniversary of Livetopia, and we decided to just create a event environment for the player to celebrate the anniversary. Mm-hmm. Player liked that a lot, so we bring that off as a standalone experience called Skytopia. It's a futuristic city. But that's the bare minimum of Livetopia game. And we saw a very low session time, which really translated into a very bad retention. But we wanted just to use that as a test bed. So we're thinking, like, what was missing? Why, like, the similar game experience was a spin-off? Why this was bad? So we're trying to add those missing features one by one. The biggest one was the avatar, because we took the avatar feature away from that. And when we add that back, immediate 30% increase of session. So session runs. Yeah, that was the first experiment that we did.
No, it's awesome that you have access to that data and that you're able to A/B test. I think Roblox's analytics platform has come a long way. So I imagine when you were doing this 2 years ago, that you had to build your own analytics tooling in order to run these.
Yeah, that's the upper hand of a professional developer. So we actually had the ability to build our own analytics tool. Even today, when we were running brand integrations, because they need customized analytics. For example, brands want to see how long players stay in their brand experience, how many interactions the player had with the brand avatars, brand NPCs, for example, which so far Roblox analytics tool didn't support the customized analytics, but they are going to support that very soon, as I told. Yeah, so we are still using our customized BI or analytics tool today. And going back to the brand integration, I was talking about we want us to do more organic, like closing brands. We, because of the avatar scenes, player want to try on those new clothes over there. It's actually very natural for clothing brands to have clothing shop in the game, so player can try actually those clothing from different brands. So that's actually, in my opinion, the biggest takeaway from brand integration. So for all the new brand integrations or brand activations, I always suggest them to do that in a more organic way. So for example, there were some brands, they were building Oppy in Livetopia. It was not bad experience, but it's certainly not what the player were looking for. They actually enter Livetopia for roleplay experience rather than just the Oppy challenges. By the way, Oppy, which is very familiar for Roblox audience, which is obstacle course, Because if they want to play obstacle courses, they can just play like obby games on Roblox. They don't need to go into a RP experience like Livetopia to play obstacle courses. Yeah, that's something I would recommend.
Awesome. And just help us, or maybe we can talk a little bit about the value proposition for brands working with Livetopia versus building their own experience from scratch. I was like, I want to ask this question. I think I have some numbers here. All right. So this is from your Brands in Livetopia 2022 numbers. So you had 314 million total brand experience visits. You had 12 brands activate. You had 5.2 million average monthly active players in a brand experience. You had 12 million total engagement hours of brand experiences. And you had 58 million total virtual brand items acquired. So those are some pretty crazy numbers. As someone who came from building brand experiences, we would tell brands 5 million visits is a good number for the first year. And these are just like, these activations, I think, are just like a month long. And you're already eclipsing what we would do in a year. And I don't know how much you guys are charging for these experiences, but presumably we would charge hundreds of thousands of dollars for these original brand experiences to be launched. So I think, when you talk about ROI, like for money in, from my perspective, working with existing game like Livetopia delivers a much higher ROI. There's a lot of room for capturing margin there between the cost of building an original experience and just activating in something like Livetopia.
Absolutely, yeah. So by the way, all these numbers are public. We just shared that in a Livetopia.com website. If anyone wanted to check it, other than the 2022 number, we also have 2023 number. I think both were shared on that website. So yes, to answer your question, in my opinion, the biggest value proposition for doing brand integration into an existing successful Roblox experience is the massive user base it already has. So typically, like you said, you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars building a experience. If you say a standalone experience, you just spend that much money building that, and then you need to do user acquisition, right? Roblox has its immersive ads, many other ways, or you can do influencing marketing, but they all cost you extra money. And so basically, on top of those hundreds of thousands of dollars, you still need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get your initial traffic. The problem is, if the game metrics was bad, those traffic you got from user acquisition or marketing won't trigger the platform discovery algorithm. So after you finish the campaign, your player account will just drop sharply and eventually to zero. And there's basically just you get for all the money you spend, and there is no ad, no bonus you get. But for Livetopia or any other similar game experiences, because they are more like what we call an evergreen game experience, so Roblox send organic traffic every day. So for example, for Livetopia and Metro Life, we both receive like hundreds of thousands new players in each day. I mean, at least definitely six digit. I forgot the number nowadays, but definitely six digit new players each day from the Roblox. And these players, they enter the game, they will immediately see the brand content, right? And they will engage with those brand content. It's just more than impressions, because if you do that well, you integrate that game content into everyday play. So they will actually just play the game. And also, there are a lot of returning player for Livetopia and Metro Life. These games and all the other successful games, because these games have very good retention metrics. So a lot of returning player. So they return return to the game every day, and they will continue play the brand integration. And believe it or not, a lot of standalone brand experience, like player enter that, they play the content, they just leave. I'm pretty sure a lot of those standalone brand experience had a very poor retention metrics, because otherwise they would be picked up by the discovery algorithm, right? Because they were not, that means their metrics are bad. So those, in my opinion, that's the biggest value proposition for doing brand integration in existing experiences. So you basically get the extra marketing effect by spending the same amount of money.
Yeah, and I also think that you get a halo effect as well, because when you create an original experience from scratch, a branded experience, people just look at it as this is like an advert game. Like this is an advertisement. This isn't made for me. Like I'm going to get out of here as quickly as I came in. Whereas if you are integrating an existing game that someone has a relationship with, they trust the developers, they feel a sense of identity with that game. Having your brand in that builds that affinity. And so I think there's just so many reasons why building an existing experience makes a lot of sense. All right, so I just want to move on and talk about Metrolife just briefly, because you guys launched another game, which is an RP game. I'm curious, what was the thought process for launching an additional RP game versus exploring other genres on the platform?
Yeah, not just you. A lot of people ask us because it's weird. We are competing with ourselves, right? Live2Play was doing a lot of brand integration, but we also had a lot of ideas how to improve the game. But because we had a lot of commitment to brand integration, we actually couldn't spend a lot of time improving the game to the direction we want. So we end up discussing like, how about we just putting all of our new ideas into a brand new game. That was it. So for Metrolife, there were a few things we thought when we had the game created. So the first thing was a relatively innovative gameplay, which is more of the control of UGC. In these RP game, player will be able to build their houses, build their vehicles. Most of them were preset, like Blue Fever is completely preset. You can't even customize that. And Live2Play has like very small kind of customization feature. There's a game called Welcome to Bloxburg. There was a pretty full customization, but that's a premium game. You have to pay for that. Every player will be able to access. So for Metrolife, we saw that we give players a certain degree of freedom of customization. So we actually allow them to customize their furniture, customize wallpaper, like floor, and pretty much a lot of things. And also their vehicle, they'll be able to just make a full customization of their vehicle, the wheels, like pretty much everything about their vehicle. And this is one thing. The other thing is we actually had a pretty innovative idea. It's not innovative. It was like from GTA 4, like the integrating phone into the game. And at that time, there was no such thing on the Roblox, any of the Roblox experiences. So we wanted to integrate all the gameplay feature into the phone because it was so of a daily thing to players, so familiar to the players. So we actually introduced the phone to the role play game. Actually, this concept got borrowed by a lot of experience. Like the recent, there was a game called Life Together. It was also very successful. They did that in an even better way. They actually integrated Snapchat into that, which is super smart, super well executed. Yeah. So that's very smart.
That's amazing. And I'm surprised that's in Roblox's terms of service that you can...
Not the real Snapchat.
Okay.
In there, you basically took a selfie and you share it with your friends or any like player in the server. They can respond to you. Yeah. So it's a Snapchat feature, which is actually pretty viral at that time when they launched that. Was a lot of YouTubers they broadcast that. That actually made that game pretty successful.
Yeah, I saw that at some point. It was a top 10 game. Even top five for
That's
a
right.
second.
Yeah, you're right. Another thing is like we want it because Roblox is doing age up initiatives over these years, and there are definitely an increase of older player. So we want us to create a more realistic environment compared to the more of a cartoonish art style of Live2Play. So Metrolife, if you look at that, we inspired by a game called Barry Avenue, which is also very well done. So their art style actually really, in my opinion, one of the best, in my opinion, the art style of the role-playing game. So we borrowed a lot of their concept as well. So all these together, we couldn't do that for Niveauxtopia because it's already existing established game and also a lot of commitment to brand integration. Like, we can't just say we changed the game for one day and those brand was thinking about like the old style. So we just, yeah, a lot of limitations. So we end up doing the new game. It turned out to be working really well. They're definitely not competing because it's a much broader space and they just have their own audience playing those games.
One of the things that I wonder about when you do launch a similar game, like you see with a lot of obby games, that you have developers who have created hundreds of obbies and they're just basically moving their player base across different obby games over time. And so one of the things I was wondering about is when you launched this other role-playing game, was there opportunities for cross-marketing and pushing some players into MetLife from Livetopia in order to get the algorithm going so that it would start to organically send you new players?
We thought about that. We actually did send an in-game letter and in-game follow in Livetopia, telling Livetopia player, okay, we developed a new game called Metro Life, and if you are interested, give it to Jack. But we were not thinking about migrating those players to the new experience. We were mostly thinking using that as advertisement opportunities, like in-game across promotion type of thing. I believe, yes, you are right. So some obby game, not just obby game, there are simulator game, if you know that, they migrate their old users to the new games or sequel they developed. It was pretty successful.
Just for our audience, so obby stands for obstacle courses, and simulator games are just like number go up games where you click a button and the numbers go up and then your character gets more powerful.
Yeah, because these games, there is a very obvious trait for these game is their content got consumed really quick. And basically, just you play the game for an hour and you pretty much know what's going on. Everything going beyond was repetitive experience. You just make that stronger and stronger. It's just the number goes up, right? Obby is just like challenge, like harder obstacle courses. But the gameplay essentially are the same. So that's why like their long-term retention were typically bad. So it makes perfect sense for them to migrate their player to a different scene of game. For games like role-playing, the player going there really just hanging out with their friends. So those are like social features over there. So it's just that, yeah, they'll be there like forever as long as you keep updating the content. So it doesn't make sense to migrate them to other games.
Makes sense. And just Metro Life ended up having 600 million visits. That's a lot for Roblox. And I think it's a testament to your team's ability to know what works for players. I've seen many more traditional game developers struggle to even have a tenth of those numbers. Kudos to you guys for being able to not just do it once, but do it twice. I think that's definitely demonstrates it's not just luck that you guys were able to be successful, which is in many cases, I think, you know, how people are successful just because they got lucky, and we only see the ones who are successful. We don't see the millions of developers who never were able to figure out discovery. So I wanted to talk about Century Games launching a mobile game for Livetopia. I'm curious just the strategy behind that. I thought it was really interesting because you can really have a large audience on Roblox, but it's difficult to monetize that audience. You've been obviously successful in figuring out ways to do that through brand advertising, but I'm curious if there was any thought process around moving players to more highly monetizable platforms from Roblox.
So the idea for creating a mobile version of Livetopia was technically not trying to migrate the player to a more platform that was better monetization. It was trying to take advantage of the established game IP and bring that to a broader audience. That was the original idea for doing that. And if you look into the Livetopia mobile version, which is called Livetopia Party, it's quite different from the Roblox version. Because when we were designing the game, we were thinking that's actually quite a different audience on a mobile space. Like we wanted to add more gameplay features over there because it lacks all the social features from a established platform like Roblox. It just doesn't make sense for a player who doesn't know each other to jump into your game and start chatting with each other. And there is no like existing like avatar support like what Roblox already supported. So yeah, we actually add a lot of party games, just like Eggy Party, and which is pretty hot these days.
It's like Fall Guys. Yeah. Fall Guys or Stumble Guys.
Yeah, like Fall Guys, like Stumble Guys, exactly. So those are established, battle-tested game modes that are working on mobile. So we introduce a lot of those things. And also UGC levels, which actually is still under development, which will be online soon. So we're trying to blend those things with the existing Livetopia experience, which is the social, family-friendly, casual experience. Like player can still drive cars in a small town and build their house and invite their friend for a house party, things like that. So it's a blend of a Roblox experience, Livetopia, Roblox experience with the party game experience. At this point, we are still working on that. We haven't seen a very strong metrics that will give us the confidence to do massive marketing yet. So we actually did some marketing tests in some countries, but we haven't seen the number yet that we are satisfied, very satisfied with, but we are definitely confident about the future of the game. So we will be continue working on that.
That's great. A lot of what comes to mind based off what you said is just a lot of people are looking at Roblox as a potential platform to develop new IP rather than thinking about it as a monetizing platform, but really to grow an audience for IP. And I'm curious if, based on what you're seeing, do you feel like that's the case? Like, does Livetopia have a strong IP? And how do you differentiate the strength of the IP from the strength of the gameplay for your mobile game?
Yeah. So I totally believe in that. The Roblox player, they're Gen Z. They are relatively young, but they grow, right? If you build, just like Disney's strategy, they build an IP when people are young and they recognize the IP and they grow older and they still know the IP. So they're always going to be a fit at different age. So we are a strong believer of that. We believe if you manage to build a strong IP on Roblox, you should be able to grow this IP together with your player, your audience. So that was the initial idea for doing all these things. I think so far there's no strong proof that this works because we haven't made that metrics work for the mobile version of that game. But we are definitely seeing a lot of organic traffic. So, for example, for most of Century Games, again, we do heavy UA. So we have to just keep spending ads to acquire users. But for this particular game, like in the past, I believe in the past month or two, we haven't spent a dime in marketing dollars. It's just all organic growth. So I can't tell how many of them were from because I caused by the IP effect. How many of them just got recommended from their friends or like from the Google and Apple platform. I feel the brand, because I definitely see like discussions in our Discord servers and players saying, oh, is this from Roblox? Like there are discussions over there. So I think eventually we're going to make that right. We're not there yet, but I'm a strong believer of this.
So it sounds like the IP is definitely an asset. It's going to reduce your cost per install. Your cost per install is zero right now. And you're just trying to figure out how to make a game that people want to stick around and play for a long time.
Yes.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And I think our audience will definitely be interested in digging deeper on that. In the interest of time, I want to just zoom out a bit and think about how Roblox fits into Century Games' broader strategy. So Century Games had a recent breakthrough hit in Whiteout Survival. And I'm curious, given that this was just a massive success, has that shifted your strategy? Has that shifted how you prioritize building on Roblox versus building for iOS, Android, etc.?
Yeah, it has no impact to our Roblox business, has no impact to our plan on Roblox. First of all, our Roblox studio is profiting. It doesn't make sense to kill a profiting business at all. Second, even I myself spend a lot of time on Roblox and people been asking, is it really worth your time? I still believe so. So I feel this is, I can't say this is the future, but this is part of the future. UGC is always, in my opinion, the future of gaming. And Roblox is the pioneer of UGC space. And I definitely don't want to miss the opportunity here. Regardless of how much we make from Roblox, I think it's definitely going to be part of our strategy. And another thing about that I just mentioned briefly earlier is you don't need to do any, you don't need to spend any marketing dollar on Roblox as well. It's just organic traffic all the time. It's like the money you've earned on Roblox platform is just your net revenue. You don't pay any marketing dollars at any point. Maybe just a very small one to get cold starts, but after that, you don't need to spend a dime. So this is a pretty profiting business. And another thing, like I said, it's growing over time. And the first of all, the players, they all grow with you. And if you can build a strong IP, just like I mentioned, you potentially could make this a evergreen business. And another thing I want to say is I'm a strong believer of AI. I feel like AI and UGC are combined together in the future. Roblox is always saying, or one of their motto is powering imagination. And I always think the biggest obstacle to imagination is the expertise of the game creator. Because we have 8 billion people in the world and there are so many great ideas. Only I think a fraction of them will be able to realize that because they know how to do coding, they know how to create like art, right? 3D models, animations, effects, sound effects, all those things. But with the help of AI and its approaching, it's at a very fast speed and eventually might be just a matter of years, even shorter, we will be able to just tell the engine to create the thing we want. And I know Roblox is pioneering this area. And it's just so natively fit with their UGC strategy and with our strategy. And ultimately, the creator will be able to just tell the engine to create something for them by using text. And it's just the sky is the limit. Literally, that's it.
Doesn't this take away your competitive advantage, though? Everyone is a creator. Then you, as Century Games, don't have an advantage because now you basically, you've gone from, I think there's 5.4 million developers on Roblox today. There's 350 million, roughly, monthly active users. Imagine a world where you're not, it's already super competitive, but imagine a world where you're going from competing with 5 million developers to 350 right. million developers.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't, from a business perspective, isn't that sort of a scary proposition for you?
Yes, that's a very good point. And I mean, a lot of game developers being concerning AI that take away their job or things like that. It's actually very similar. My point is, if you don't embrace that, you will be replaced. It's similar. It's just as a game developer, if you don't embrace all these new tools, you don't like keep the same pace with them, it eventually will be replaced by others. So that's why I want to keep an eye, and not just to keep an eye, but just really just battling the front end with all these opportunities. So when they are here, we take advantage of them as the first, like first time mover, rather than just a follower. So that's my point.
Yeah, and Roblox has introduced some AI features already. I think they first launched them maybe 12 months ago. And they have a feature called Assistant, which is Copilot for GitHub. I'm curious,
yeah.
Have you experimented with these features? Are they helping Century Games with Roblox development? And what are some of the needs that you have as a developer that you think AI can really support on?
Yes. Yeah, we definitely tried. We are literally on beta test of every new Roblox features. So we tested them. They haven't been in a in my opinion, the production needs for most of our projects. And for example, many of our projects were brand integrations, and those really can't really help us. They have a very specific reason for not doing that.
What are the things that the current AI features enable?
So they have those texture. So one thing is they are working on just the text to model generation. They haven't get that nailed down. They right now have the ability to just select a model from a store of like tens of thousands, even more models by just using the user input. But they haven't done the generative AI creation part of that yet. But they've done the texture creation, which I actually tested that was pretty well done so far. They're still improving that. But for Roblox, they have a lot of moderation work needs to do for any of the new features they release because their audience is relatively younger. So a lot of constraints for releasing that to public. So yeah, we won't be able to test a lot of new features. I know the team been working really hard on that, and I've been doing some of the internal tests with them, but most of them haven't been released to public yet.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you said before of UGC and AI being a perfect fit. And I think there are a lot of, if there is an opportunity for there to be a new platform, a new UGC game platform that reaches the size of UESN, Fortnite, or Roblox, it'll probably be through the innovation of AI and being able to scale content that way. I'm curious, do you think that Roblox can move fast enough in order to ensure that there's a preeminent UGC AI or AIGC platform, or do you think that this is an opportunity for new companies to make an impact?
I think it's an opportunity for everyone. Everyone realized that. And I was at NJSON speedrun demo day. I think literally, in my opinion, 90% of the projects were AI related, even some of them not either. So like, you know, VC spend hot money over there, projects or utilizing AI one way or another. And all the existing platform are embracing AI. Yeah, it's not just a formal. It's, in my opinion, it's the right thing to do. You need to act fast. Otherwise, you are in danger, seriously. So yeah, for Century Games, we actively investing into AI as well. So we have our AI team, and pretty much most of our game projects, we use AI one way or another. Some of their, like, improve their productivity, some improve their live ops, and some we have some AI native games as well. So yeah, we're doubling down there. And I think everyone should. If you don't do that, someone else will be doing that.
Awesome. And just while we're on the topic of other platforms, how do you see Fortnite? Is that part of Century Games' future at all, or are you mostly going to be focused on Roblox going forward?
Yeah, we looked into Fortnite. We haven't started doing that. The primary reason, two reasons. One is they don't allow in-app purchase yet. All their revenue share was through playtime share, which was, in my opinion, not our strength. And the other thing is they don't allow external data transfer yet, at least as far as I know. For example, we won't be able to do the analytics tool on their platform, which kind of I mentioned earlier was our upper hand, so just to cut down one of our hands. So we don't have a lot of advantage over there. Yeah, it's pretty much those two primary reasons, but we are keeping an eye on that as well.
Yeah, I think that they definitely have a lot of potential, but a long way to go too before they achieve that potential and get up to speed with the capabilities and moddability of Roblox. I think just to wrap up, I'd love to hear your perspective. Do you think other mobile or traditional game developers should be looking at Roblox or UGC games in general? Or is this sort of something that you've carved out for Century Games and is not something that you would expect other developers to spend much time on?
For example, small studios, if you focus on one area, you probably don't want to diversify your energy to too many platforms. It's not good for you. For big companies, if you have the bandwidth, you definitely should take a look, in my opinion. But one thing I would say is whatever new opportunity or new platform you're looking at, be patient and stay humble. As I just mentioned at the very beginning, so you will be learning lessons, even sometimes that others told you like to avoid. But until you really hit that by yourself, you probably won't take that very serious. So that the thing is, you need to have some patience to overcome those. If we fail the first project and we decide to cancel the developments, then there'll be no Livetopia, no Metro Live, no Century Game Roblox business at all, no brand integration at all. We failed the first project and actually we developed another game and they also failed. That game didn't even see to the market. And until we got this, Livetopia was our third project on the platform. So yeah, you need to have a lot of patience and you need to learn from others. Stay humble. I think that's my advice to other studios.
That's great. So what would you say is the opportunity for a large game company, if they're considering it, if they have the bandwidth to experiment on with UGC, what's sort of the value that they could potentially realize down the line?
It's actually pretty similar to ours. So even at the time when Century was not as big as today, we are still pretty profiting on a mobile game. And at that time it was Facebook game. We're still running some of our Facebook game, by the way. They're pretty profiting, and looking into another platform, in my opinion, is always, as a big studio or mid studio, it's always something you should look at because there are always new opportunities. Unless you are very comfortable with where you are and you know how to innovate within your space, and you're just so deterministic that your next opportunity just to rely in your existing, whether platform or genre, you should just take a look outside of the world. And because there are always new opportunities there. That's our, at least Century's philosophy, because we try all new opportunities like VR, MR, all those things, AI. We just never, unless you feel like there is absolutely no chance for you, which could be true in some circumstances. For example, we don't try console game because we just feel it's too far away from our expertise. And there are a few genres we don't touch, like MMORPGs, things like that. Even I myself is a very heavy MMORPG player. We just understand those territories will not be really just good for us. But if you like Roblox platform is like why I suggest others to take a look. It doesn't require a large team, a huge investment into that. It's just like a small area. You can just whether have someone who's interested in that area, you just hire some external developers who's familiar with that platform, just give it a try. And you, who knows, you might be surprised.
Yeah, it makes sense. So be patient and experiment, and who knows what'll happen. You could find yourself with a few extra $1 million in your pocket. And as UGC scales, maybe even more. Thanks so much, Shang. It's been awesome to have you on the podcast. And I'll be looking forward to tracking all of Century Games' success going forward, both on Roblox as well as on mobile.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thanks for having me here.
If you enjoyed today's episode, whether on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, or give a 5-star review. And if you want to reach out or provide feedback, shoot us a note at podcast@navik.co or find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Plus, if you want to learn more about what Navik has to offer, make sure to check out our website, www.navik.co. There, you can sign up for the #1 games industry newsletter, Navik Digest, or contact us to learn about our wide-ranging consulting and advisory services. Again, that is www.navik.co. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.